This is the first in what I hope is going to be a series of podcasts in which I talk to people whose work I particularly admire and who are engaged in some interesting, innovative projects, stuff that I'd like to share with the world and amplify and hopefully get a little bit under the skin and behind the thinking of the people involved. Not quite sure how regular they're going to be. I'm not putting any pressure on myself to make this a regular thing, but it seems to me that I'd like to share some of my interests through these podcasts with you, the listener. So the first podcast is me talking to Phil Jewett. Phil is Senior Communications Manager at Leeds City Council and is responsible for leading a project called The Sociable Organisation, which I've been interested in for quite some time now. The Sociable Organisation is a project which is about Leeds City Council and its partners coming together and working in more sociable ways. Social media is driving this. There's an assumption that more people will use social media, that collaboration, co-creation will be fostered through the use of social media. It's obviously starting with the City Council as an organisation and trying to get more people and teams using social tools, but also to work with their partners across the city to collaborate and create a new future. I've admired this project for quite some time now, and I was really grateful for Phil spending the time to catch up with me and tell me a little bit about the background and what's gone into the project so far. So Phil and I met up in the convivial surroundings of the Victoria Hotel in Leeds, over a coffee. It definitely was coffee, I can assure you of that. And just chewed the fat for a bit about the project. And there's some lovely stories in here. There's some real proof in here of my adage that storytelling is the most important thing we can do. And Phil talks about how telling stories has opened up new vistas for people in ways it could probably have never envisaged, and certainly would never have been opened up by just putting guides and reports on a website. So sit back, listen to my conversation with Phil, and please give me some feedback in the comments. Hope you enjoy it.
Well, the whole purpose of it was just to partly document and tell the story of how we were introducing initially social media, but different ways of doing something that might make a difference, that might be a little bit fun as well. I think it stemmed from two sort of initiatives. One was in October 2012, I think it was, the LGA brought out a social media friendly initiative, somebody tweeted our chief executive and said, "So when's Leeds City Council going to be social media friendly then?" And then what happened was an email, actually on Twitter, it landed on my account. "Phil, can you sort this out?" So I sort of took it offline and said, "Well, we can have a look at it, but it isn't going to be any time soon because of the implications of what social media friendly means and where we were and what we weren't doing." And then the other thing that at the time was Leeds Council, Glasgow Council and Cardiff Council had got together and had a look at what the future of local government might be. It was called the Commission on the Future of Local Government, and how civic enterprise might kick in. So that was about how councils would become more business-like and, hate this word, citizens, people, society would become a little bit more civic. So obviously with the budget cuts and stuff, what councils could do. So I put them both together and said, well, a lot of people aren't going to understand the commission work and social enterprise and civic enterprise for a start, so we need to find a way of explaining that and having a discussion about it. And secondly, from a social media point of view, isn't there an opportunity here to create those discussions in places where people might contribute? So sum it all up, what we had a look at was, what if we try to understand what a more sociable organisation might be within and without and across the boundaries of it. So how do we not just create our own discussions, but how do we find out where discussions are, what use of social media is, how staff might use social media, that aspect of it. And then we looked at it and thought, well, it's not just social media, it's how we interact, how we meet, flexible working, all that sort of stuff, the length of the working day, because at the time we were looking at social media chats at 8 o'clock at night, you're thinking, well, that's actually work, but so all that sort of stuff, and we put it together and we thought, sociable organisation, let's just do it. Let's not have a project initiation document and performance indicators and all that sort of stuff. If we're being asked to be innovative and creative, let's just rock this thing off, push a snowball uphill and see where it goes. And it went really well. And then we created the blog and we started documenting what we've done. And we're introducing training and that sort of stuff. So it's gone really well, and we're sort of 2 years down the road now. And it's still going.
So it's a pretty ambitious agenda then. It's right across staff, citizens, communities, everything.
We heard on Sociable City, and I'm not particularly one for straplines, and I think sociable organisation is not the best title for it, but it was just something about understanding what it might be like to be a little bit more sociable in how we meet, make work a bit more fun, rather than somewhere that you feel obligated to go to do stuff. We found a lot of people had skills that they'd learnt in the private life about in their home lives and using social media, so why did we sort of feel that we needed to leave it at the door when we came to work? Because if that's skills that's going to make us a little bit more open and a bit more human, why wouldn't we? So, yes, there's no end date to it. It'll just continue. And it's becoming a little bit more than, oh, that thing that Phil Jewett does. We've now got training in place and support, and we're introducing sort of networks of people across the organisation. They were looking at different elements and connecting it. So it will just continue. Other organisations have come and had a chat to us about, so what is this big thing? And it's life. It's been interesting. I've been really encouraged about how we've managed to shift stuff. Well, I mean, there's been barriers. There always will be. I mean, it could have been seen as our culture shift. It's contributing to that, but it isn't the main part of it. I suppose the barriers are, for us, introducing social media into a large organisation without it being seen as controlling. So we've always looked at it as coordination of, support for, that sort of stuff, but linking it to where we can provide guidance and training, which has been key. And then if we're encouraging staff to go out and talk, do they feel supported that they can do that? Are they ready? And actually, whose job is it to do that? Especially, and that's where the interesting dilemma about difference between political and corporate, who sets strategy, who is allowed to talk about potential changes of direction and strategy. But that's something that, even if we weren't on social media or we hadn't introduced that, we'd still have that dilemma, whether it's a public meeting or not.
And we're all in favour of organisations showing their human faces to people, and I suppose that's a key part of what you're trying to do here. I mean, there must be people who are suspicious about that, particularly if I come across people all the time who are worried about what they can say in public, and even if you try and encourage them to talk in public, it's like, well, there must be an agenda behind that. Why do you want me to do this? And it's, have you come across any of that kind of stuff?
Really? Yeah, I mean, the good thing with documenting it on the blog as well is that we're describing what we're trying to achieve, and we do get the comments back saying, well, what is the hidden agenda? And it's a case of, well, we're trying to be as open as we can with stuff. We're trying new ways. We know some of it might not work, but we shouldn't not do it because it might not be successful. And we've invited people in who might be critics of the council, and we've had chats and said, well, this is what we're trying to achieve. It fits all the different agendas. What do you think? And it's been an opportunity to make some differences and find out, better understand things from different points of view. We've had a barrier with the tech that we've got that allows us to introduce blogs and social media and that side of it. Obviously, big organisations and licences for various things, it costs an amount of money. So therefore, one of the things that we have tried to do that's backed up sociable organisation concept is whatever we do, let's do it so that it's sustainable and we manage expectations of what we're doing. Because there's nothing worse than setting something up, especially when it's around talking and listening, and then not being able to listen and not being able to respond when we do get comments. So what we've been realistic in saying, we can use social media, but what it means is that we would expect to be able to respond within 2 hours, within working hours, and to be able to list what our working hours are and then have discussions about when what is outside working hours and how we would cover that. So, and we get a little bit of, I expect a response within 5 minutes, and sometimes that just isn't possible. Some of the nature of the questions require a bit of research and stuff. But one of the big things that we've moved towards is we now have, down our customer services, we now have social media, Facebook and Twitter as a help option. And we've introduced web chat as well, which has been really successful, where we can talk people through in real time. And at the end of that, we've asked people, so what did they think about that web chat, and how do they feel about the use of social media, and that's been a success. And that's now starting to roll out across different service areas, and they're picking it up. But again, in order to keep it sustainable, the whole team has to take it on board. So we have to provide training so that they can have maybe two or three members of staff trained up, so they all know what they can do. So yeah, we know there will continue to be barriers. Quite a lot of our staff don't have access to our network. So from that point of view, we can't assume that digital by default, and now we'll shift everything online, that our staff are going to be online. So we've been working at that as well. And again, that's part of us being a bit more sociable. Because in some of the services we provide, we realise that people aren't online. They're not connected in that sort of... Not everybody has smartphones that we might have. So the sociable bit is about providing spaces for people to come and actually talk face-to-face about the issues that they've got and how we can help them. So that sort of doesn't really fit with digital by default. Yes, some of the services that we might provide have some digital in it, but actually we still need to provide places to come and have a chat. And similarly for staff, when we're trying to get them into this more networked society to talk with partner organisations about how we might jointly provide services, like we are meeting now, John, sat having a coffee. It doesn't always have to be in the civic hall in a meeting room, because that could put people off as well. So it's encouraging staff to say, well, yeah, you can do, works what you do, not necessarily where you do it. So
yeah, I mean, when I go into organisations and talk to them about social media, I'm always quite careful at the right point to say to them, look, this is not about adding something on to the side of your everyday job.
Yeah.
This is actually about fundamentally changing the way you and your organisation work.
Yes. Yeah.
And if you're not up for that, then, well, I'll go away. And so far, nobody's told me to go away, so that's good.
Well, that's it. I mean, we've had, initially when we asked who was using social media, when it came from why are corporate communications asking, it was a case of we didn't do it like that, because we thought everybody would think initially that, we best not say because they'll stop us. And it was a case of, that was never any intention. It was a case of, what have we got so we can support it and coordinate it and make sure that it is sustainable. So within something like an hour of asking the question on our intranet and various other internal comms channels, who would like support with the social media work they're doing, we found we had another 26 social media accounts that weren't aware of. And that, but they'd put their hands up and said, yeah, we'd like support. So we brought it all together. As I said earlier, we've now got a network of what we call digital champions, which look at what we put on the web as information and then how we discuss what we talk about and how we engage and create chats about stuff on the social media area. And then obviously we work with the comms team. So we've got this idea of social publishing, where we've got information on the website, which will gradually get sort of smaller, less information, so it's just times of services and what the offer is, and then explaining how things are going to change and dipping our toe in the water and asking people what do they think about this, that and the other in the discussion area. And then the signposting areas, so using things like Twitter and emails and posters and that sort of stuff, is the signposting stuff. We found that people understand that area. We've got information, we've got the discussion area, and then we signpost to it. So if we're having chats about stuff and we're saying, for more information, go to the website or blah 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 blah, what do you think? We point to the discussion areas, which might be Facebook, it might be a blog, it might be whatever.
So actually, what you're saying is something I very much agree with is, you know, social media isn't just about communication, it's actually about it's fostering collaboration and co-production and all those sorts of things.
Absolutely, I think it's an interesting part of that is when we rolled out the new intranet, we sort of made a bit of a mistake, because if we'd have just said, here is your new social network, rather than here's the new phone book, people would have thought, oh, we're introducing a social network, I wonder what that means. And it's got enterprise search on it, so not only can you find people's phone numbers on it, you can search by topic areas and find people who are, so you can find people who are working on projects that you might be interested in, but you don't know who they are yet. So that allows an opportunity for networking within the organisation. So now we've developed that and encouraged people to update the profiles on what we call our My Sites, because we use SharePoint. You can then take that concept up a level and say, okay, well, if we know how to search for people in our organisation, why wouldn't we use things like LinkedIn to find people across the city and in other organisations that we can then collaborate with? Because it's all the same sort of... But I think it's interesting how, again, it's down to culture shift. I think there's a history of, if you were seen on LinkedIn in work's time, you're looking for another job. And there is an element of that, and that's what sociable organisation is about as well, is how do we accommodate using the networks and technology for constructive purposes. We had a classic example where we were, there was a channel shift camp in Derby, which was an event, and I think it was on for between 11 o'clock and 3 o'clock one day, and people from all over the country went to it. And Nick Hill, I think the guy who organised it, set up a LinkedIn group beforehand. So people who were on LinkedIn had the opportunity to join, and if they weren't, they were encouraged to set up a profile so that there was discussion around what the event might be beforehand and evaluation after. So encouraging that the groups on LinkedIn increased the opportunity, A, for the benefit of the event, but also it allowed people to network and meet beforehand and afterwards and then pick up contacts. So I think the opportunity for social networks and the training that you've got to put in as well, so that people understand why, and that it is all right to be on Instant Messenger and LinkedIn and Facebook in work's time, because search engine wise, you can find an awful lot out that's going to help you with work. Not everybody in organisations sees it like that, though.
It's really interesting, because I suppose part of what this does is it illustrates the points I'm making all the time, is that social media is actually great fun, but it is also... It is also changing the world, really, and it's changing the way we work. And it's opening us up to... Oh, yeah. I suppose one of the points I was going to make was, what does this mean for hierarchies? So if I can search for someone, if I work in your organisation, and I can search for someone who... And I want to approach them directly about something.
I think it's a bit of a head shift. And that's one of the things that we're doing is round the edges to support social media introduction and how we meet and where we meet and the times we meet, is that, yes, it does give us access to talk directly to... So on an evening at 8 o'clock at night, I can be having a chat on Twitter with our chief exec. It's a bit of a leveller. Some people still may not feel confident to do that. So that's why the support that we're putting in the training talks about this network society versus hierarchical society. But and again, this is one of the ideas behind sociable organisation, it's people talking to people. And if it makes us more human, and so what if our profile isn't a straight mugshot like on a passport, if we've got a hat on or what have you, as long as there's a face to it to a certain extent, I don't think it matters as much. But it is, and again, that's one of the culture shift things that we need to start to still work on, to move from the vertical to the horizontal. So yeah, it is an issue, but again, that's why the sociable side of it comes in.
And I suppose as well, one thing it does facilitate it facilitates an idea that there's an awful lot of people and organisations with a stake in how the city runs, and it's not just for the council.
Yeah, because you see that you tend to see that network working and people talking across organisations, across our organisational boundaries, and meeting up. And I mean, the discussion that we've had today about us meeting here is in public, and there's nothing wrong with that. That's how we work. People see who's working with who, and then it's an opportunity to have a look at our individual profiles and see what we do, and then maybe think, oh, well, that's interesting. And then probably when we leave here, we'll probably talk about what's gone on and what have you. And then people can think, all right, I might contact them and see how I could be involved in that. So absolutely, absolutely.
Is there anything particularly that you would have wanted to achieve with social organisation that you haven't achieved yet?
Thinking about it, I think it's a yes and a no answer, is that. I think not everything works at exactly the same pace. And speaking from an organisation point of view, when we've got thousands and thousands of employees, not every service area is going to be able to resource what other teams can do. And we're never going to be able to support wholesale training at the same time for everybody. So it's a case of some areas will take to it and don't need some support because they're doing some great stuff. What we need to do, and that's something that linked to, I suppose, what we just talked about, is when we see people using social media and what they're achieving and how they're doing it, seeing is believing, I think. If you can see somebody using it and seeing what's happening, it self-perpetuates, and then you lurk a little bit and you see what other people are doing before you dip yourself toe in the water. So am I disappointed in certain areas that stuff hasn't happened? There's areas that we would like to encourage people to be a little bit more open and a bit more engaging and actually dip their toe in the water, but I think it eventually will come. And I think if you force people to do it and it isn't sincere, then it just stands out, and I don't think that works. So I suppose there's a frustration with the some of the stuff that doesn't work tech wise but that will come. And I think what this has done, opening up this it's nudged us a little bit so that stuff's happening faster than it probably would have done, because people are being innovative and they're using social media within guidelines and what have you, and they're nudging where we're going with stuff. And I think the thing that is interesting for us is we've always put this idea of context in. What are we doing it for? Because if we can't answer that question, maybe we shouldn't be. So we don't want to be doing some of this stuff just because we can. There's got to be a real purpose why we're doing it. And we learned that early on when we did, before we kicked it all off, we did a pilot on voice, context and digital identity. And that was at the same time we were doing the how many accounts have we got and who wants some support. Because we found that people had set it up to try it and dip the toe in the water. And they could. And they set up various accounts. But they didn't really have the outcomes and what was needed to do it. So now we've got a bit more of a focus and we're starting to see some tangible results of benefits that are happening because of doing it.
Have there been any major howlers, blunders?
You get people tweeting from the wrong account every now and again, but it's nothing. But as far as I'm aware, none of those issues have been where it's been, oops, I've done that from the wrong account, and now it's from the right account. And there's nothing been, I mean, I've seen stuff documented from other organisations and councils where it hasn't been pretty bad. We haven't had any major things like that. We've not had any, but again, the support that we've put in place on how staff should really behave when they're using the service area accounts. We go through various sort of training and provide guidance for that. It still doesn't cover, but while we're rolling it out now, is how staff might want to think about how they live their lives. So like we're having a chat now, and people on other tables might be able to hear what we're saying. It's that. So, and we've got different sort of different levels of the guidance down to the basics. Don't say anything in public that you wouldn't put on a t-shirt and walk down the hedgerow in Leeds in. It's as basic as that sometimes. I think what we've had, where we have, I suppose, the biggest blunders have been where we've mismanaged the expectations of responses and response times. And where we've got email response time and responding to letter response time, it's assumed, oh, well, it's social media, so therefore that'll be days worth of responding. No, it isn't. So we've had instances where we've had accounts set up and it's been a case of keen staff who set accounts up have then gone on 2 weeks holiday and nobody's picked the account up. So there's been stuff festering, and it tends to be not necessarily festering about what the original question was, but festering about the fact that, well, hang on a minute, you've got a social media account, therefore that means to me that you're open 24/7, therefore where's my response? So that has been the biggest area where, so that's why we were realistic with service areas to say, think about it, you're probably going to need 2 or 3 members of staff trained, and the expectation is that if responding to a letter is so many days, responding to an email is so many hours, that if you get a question or a direct message or an ad on Twitter or Facebook, then you're probably going to want to do it within an hour or acknowledge it within an hour and then get back that's realistic. So that has probably been the biggest area that we've had to manage expectations with staff on. And some accounts we've had to say, well, linking back to the context stuff, what is it you're trying to achieve? And if you can't manage that, maybe you shouldn't. But what we have tried to do is where we've got staff in linked service areas, maybe they pool it together and then they can have a higher sort of service area, more logical, like a housing account rather than 4 different housing accounts that can't manage it. Have 1 housing account and then rotate it, or get staff who are keen to do it, cover it that way. So where we've not come across blunders as such, but where we've come across areas where we weren't covering it well, we've looked at it and thought, here's an opportunity where you could. And so for the service areas, is that how you would want to proceed? And given them the opportunity to do that, and then provided the training for them to do it that way.
Mm. Are there any particular individual success stories?
Yeah. 2 coming out of the original pilot that we ran. The original pilot, we took 12 folk from right across the different service areas at different levels, and we did this voice context and digital identity pilot for about 6 or 7 weeks, where we just talked about social media and social networks and how to build it and how to what they might want to do, and just said, bring a project that you might want to do. And 2 of the projects that came out of that, one was something called At Recovery Leeds, which was a guy who had his own blog in his personal life and had social media skills, but he tried in the past to use it at work, and the service area was in weren't having any of it, mainly because they didn't understand it, not because they didn't, you see in the papers it's risks and that always comes first. They didn't see the opportunities. So by getting him on the pilot, it allowed us to explore the opportunities. And what he did was, by using social media, he brought the majority of the drug and alcohol recovery services in Leeds together under one sort of like hashtag. And imagine if we'd have gone to one of our boards and said, we're thinking of setting up a Twitter account and giving it to drug users and alcoholics, what do you think? That wouldn't have happened. But so we had people who were in recovery in charge of the accounts for weeks and rotating it. And the success for that was that some of the people who had these accounts then ended up getting placements at other organisations. And it's made a massive difference to their life just because they could tell their story and increasing other people in getting in touch with the recovery services. Another example is in our adult social care area. We have what's called the Better Lives blog, and we rotate that round various members of staff. So every 6 weeks it's their week on, so they write the blog piece. They then signpost to it using Twitter. They make sure that the web content related to the information about whatever they're doing is up to speed. We had one area where, and also because in adult social care they commission services that the council doesn't provide but supports, and some of these organisations don't have the opportunity to promote themselves. So we tell their stories using social media and we put it on the blog. And 1 week we'd done a story about an organisation called Dales, who provide hard of hearing information and adaptations, so for people's houses and equipment. And we'd set the blog up, and the week that it was one member's of staff week to do the blog, we didn't do it about content. We said, what difference does this blog make to you? Has it made a difference? What would you like to talk about? What would you like to see less of? What would you like to see more of? And the first comment that came back was from a guy who'd read one of the articles that we'd published the week before about this organisation that provided hard of hearing stuff. And he said, thanks to this blog, I can now hear my doorbell and my neighbours don't complain about the noise of my telly. Now, we don't put that information on our website, but because we'd told the story, he'd read the story, he'd contacted the organisation, he'd got himself fixed up. Now, in the true idea of what the blog's about, better lives for people of Leeds, through, he's got a better life, his neighbours have definitely got a better life. So that's the sort of stuff that we don't go into that depth on our website. We tell the stories and we ask for feedback. So just two examples there of where it's made a difference. And when we take that anecdote to other service areas and tell it, yes, we've got all the stats from how many blog hits we've got, and we've got all the where people are coming into the site from and links between the website and the blog. You tell stories like that about how someone's life has improved. Fair enough, it's because of the service who provided the equipment, but the guy read the blog and he found out about it from talking, and he's now told his story. And other service areas have now thought, actually, that is a good example of where it's made a difference. Maybe we should do it.
Yes, it's something I say all the time, is that stories are much better than statistics and reports. And
yes, absolutely. You need a balance. And we report how many hits we've had and where we're going with things, and is it on the up, and what difference is it making, who is it that's following us. And we've got all that information and we look at it, but actually it's the stories that make the difference. And that, just that little anecdote about, it was only two sentences, that's all they said. My neighbours don't complain about the noise of my telly, and I can now hear my own doorbell. Fantastic.
Yeah, fabulous. Are there any areas, service areas, where you think, no, we're not going there, we shouldn't do it in that area?
I don't think there's any areas where we shouldn't do it. I think there's areas where we maybe haven't got the capacity to do it, in which case it would cause more problems than it was worth for that reason. I think every area can explain what it is they're trying to do and talk about that area. I suppose if I was to name one, planning is always an issue area, but people wanting to know when and where. And I think there's a difference between what people perceive having a discussion channel is and the process involved in a service area and decision making, and what planners can say about what might happen and what might not happen. So I think that's a tricky one, because you've got to put the time into actually meeting and doing that. And would you do that in a public forum, or would you, because some of that discussion is private discussion, so you might always want to keep that offline. But I don't think there's any reason why you can't have a description of what generally is going on in what's happening in the city, or plans for development, or discussions about what might be about local parks or stuff like that. So,
yeah. I suppose I was thinking about things like social services and children's services and things like that. Just a bit of context, I'm in the middle of writing a blog post at the moment about the Rotherham issue.
Yes.
And it's interesting because I've done work on IT and looked after children in the past, and you know, I know about all the sensitivities. But I think on the other side is one of the things that I've been exploring this blog post is we've got this impression these days that kids are all over social media, they're sharing their lives all the time, but actually there's 1,400 kids in Rotherham who obviously weren't, because if they had been, it would have been picked up. So there is actually some respects that could be said to be benefits about lack of privacy occasionally.
Absolutely. I mean, we do have specific guidance for service areas where there is what we would call a service user clinician relationship, and it's an interesting one because some of those areas are where our staff aren't connected to our own network. So on the one hand, we've got guidance about what they should and shouldn't do on social media, but then we're exploring opportunities of how staff may access information that we could provide them, like access to our electronic newsletters. And it's interesting, I mentioned the Better Lives blog in adult social care, we tend to be getting quite a lot of staff engagement on that blog because we're opening up some of the stories about what our senior managers are doing, and they're telling the stories about how they do their work and what their job entails. And it's interesting that the majority of staff know, because we did emphasise that this was a public forum and that anything that is said is in public. And it's interesting on one hand how it's in a social work area, and we're talking about social care and social work and some of the tricky subjects of how that is changing, but we're still getting the staff engagement on it, and people are starting to, and looking at the stats behind it, more people are picking it up on iPads and accessing it through smartphones than in the beginning. So we can start to see the trend. So that suggests to us that staff are maybe open to exploring, accessing. So could we use that as an opportunity to better engage and keep staff up to speed with information that they need to know about? Because at the end of the day, those staff in children's services and adult social care, social workers, they tend to be the ones that people trust. So if they don't know the information that we're giving them, then they're giving the wrong information. So there is a fantastic opportunity to use tech and social networks and to help keep people up to speed with what's going on.
Is there anything you can say about next steps, or is it just open-ended and you don't really want to put parameters and strategies behind it?
Not a strategy as such. I think this idea that a changing culture and culture eats strategy for breakfast, as I've heard people say. I think the flexible bit of that, we don't know where this is necessarily going. Obviously, we want to roll out more support for staff. We want more people to get involved in it and access the training. We want to see more benefits, like the doorbell scenario. I think where I think it will come in, this networking idea and the meeting spaces, we're going to be moving out of buildings in the city centre, and then we're moving more towards flexible working, working at home and working in different touchdown places. So I think this idea that, as we touched on before, we're moving away from structure to moving away from network, and some of the projects that we're looking at where more people from different service areas will collaborate on stuff. If we're not networked and we're not talking to each other virtually, then we're going to fall behind. So I think that is an area that we definitely want to develop. And this idea that you might meet virtually people who you've not met before, and then that might morph into physical meetings and what have you, and understanding what each other does, get a better understanding. That is the area that we're looking at the moment. We still have a nervousness, I feel, about, and this is the case in lots of organisations, about people not necessarily wanting to upload an image of who they are. I'd quite like to have a look at that a little bit more and see why that is. I mean, my view is always that if you'd rather look at somebody's face than, so you can see who they are, and you get a better effect, especially when you're splitting, not splitting teams up, but teams are working a little bit more remotely. If when you get a message, your face pops up, you can see, you think, all right, yeah, I'll they're online, or that person's online, I'll just say good morning to them. It's that aspect that is the sociable element of it.
Yeah, I agree. I find a lot people not wanting to be photographed, people not wanting videos taken of them. And it's just that people, you know, people are not used to looking at themselves. I think that's the issue.
Yes.
Yeah, and they don't realise that other people see them like that all the time.
So. Yes. Yeah.
if they were that horrendous looking, they probably would have been told about it by now.
Well, exactly. And I know when we listen to our voices back on tape, we think, oh, do I really sound like that? And it's a case of, well, actually, it's what you say and what you mean and that side of it. Then, and that's part of what makes us all human and slightly different. So I think strategy-wise, we will continue to do this. It will continue not to have performance indicators and all that sort of stuff. It's a case of this is the area where we fit in things that when we're being asked to be more creative and innovative, because budgets aren't less, this is the area where people can come and have a bit of fun and see what we can do to do stuff. So if anybody's got ideas within the council or without about how Leeds could be more sort of user-friendly and human, then we're up for the chat. Absolutely.
And at the end of the day, as I often say to people, actually, it makes work more interesting and more fun. And actually, I think you lose some of those issues about work-life balance, because if people enjoy their work, they're not that bothered about the work-life balance.
Well,
not so bothered anyway.
No, exactly. And I think that is this personal, professional, we have a bit of work to do on helping people with that. I remember in the initial days of this, we had a chat with somebody, and at the end of the meeting they said, oh, that wasn't like working with the council at all. And I thought, yeah, that's a sort of backhanded comment, is that? It's what we would want, but actually it was the perception at the beginning, that low, that that's what... But I suppose that in itself is a positive, that we changed that perception just by saying, well, we are meeting in a coffee house. You don't have to come into a meeting room in the Civic Hall, into our perceived space, to have a chat about this, because if that makes you feel ill at ease, then that's not what it's about. Sometimes you have to, but other times you don't. So.
Okay, well, thanks for that, Phil. I've been fascinated by the project since you started it, and I'm really glad for you took the time to talk to me about it. And I just hope that other organisations will do similar things.
Well, I've enjoyed doing it. I must admit, I've been given a lot of flexibility to try stuff and to go and play with things that might not initially be perceived as, well, that fits with this piece of work, or that fits with your particular job, or that fits with this. But actually, I've worked with people at different levels through the organisation and got worked with them to say, this might work, it might not. But to me, this is, if we're being asked to be innovative and creative, this could be it. And it's not all going to work, but if it doesn't work, then we've learned from it. And lots of different people in different organisations have seen the blog and asked about it. And we wanted to show what we were doing so other people could then take it. And if they can improve on it, absolutely fantastic. And it started off as a sociable organisation. If it helps with sociable city, then fantastic, sociable nation, Yorkshire, country, whatever. So, you know, it's been enjoyable. Yeah.
Great. Thanks a lot, Phil.
No problem.
Cheers.